Thanks for listening to Star Lores. If you like the show, please consider subscribing and giving a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also help us make more great content by becoming a patron at www.patreon.com. We would also love to hear from you on social media. You can follow Star Lores on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Enjoy the show, and may the Force be with you.
You are listening to the Star Lores Podcast.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Why, you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. The Star Wars tagline is both accurate and vague at the same time. While we do not know exactly where and when the events in the Star Wars saga take place, relative to us, the audience, on Earth, we do know that the history of Star Wars is long, detailed, and encompasses a myriad of civilizations, wars, and characters over the course of millions of years. We have a detailed timeline which outlines when, where, and how the events of Star Wars happen internally. This will be a very brief overview of the founding of the Republic. This will only cover the Legends timeline, as the canon timeline has been radically altered and edited and will have to be an episode of its own. The story of the Galactic Republic really was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
First to note is the how timekeeping works in the universe. Time is based on the Galactic Standard Calendar, which itself is based on the Coruscant solar cycle of 368 days and 24-hour cycles and 5 days in a week. Each day is named, at least in the Galactic Standard Calendar, though many species and cultures may mark time based on their own local customs. Prime Day, Syntax Day, Tongs Day, Jela Day, and Bendu Day. Time is recorded anachronistically and measured forwards and backwards from a single point. History is centered around the monumental Battle of Yavin, the destruction of the first Death Star, which is listed as Year Zero, often written as 0BBY. Events preceding the Battle of Yavin will list X number of years before the Battle of Yavin, or BBY, while years following the battle are X number after the battle, or ABY. During the time of the original trilogy and our entry point into the Star Wars universe with A New Hope, millions of years have already passed in the universe, and we enter into an age of conflict as the major force of the galaxy, known as the Galactic Empire, is the hegemonic ruler of the galaxy, replacing the previous Galactic Republic that had stood for millennia before. The galaxy is living under an oppressive regime exercising unilateral control of a political powder keg of planets, being held together by fear and violence and scarred from a galaxy-spanning conflict that had raged only 20 years before. The only other significant political actors are the criminal underworld, allowed to exist only as a controlled outlet in the lawless recesses of the galaxy, and a ragtag group of rebels calling themselves the Rebel Alliance, intent on challenging the authoritarian regime. This is only the latest conflict, however, in a galaxy that has never been a stranger to war, corruption, and oppression. Despite this being the familiar story, and the time we meet Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, and Princess Leia Organa, we will be starting the timeline from the very beginning of the galaxy, the founding of the Republic, and the earliest conflicts that took place millennia before the Galactic Civil War. The history of the galaxy is divided into eras and periods, usually defined by a physical reality or political or cultural zeitgeist.
the pre-Republic era. Long before galaxy-spanning empires, there was a time when the galaxy consists of lonely, isolated planets, before spaceflight, before everything. It all began with a Big Bang, and 13 billion years before the Battle of Yavin, the galaxy is formed. 8 billion years later, life first emerges on the planet Goroth Prime. It is a mid-rim world. However, the first sentient life would not arise for a long time later. Additionally, life would begin to emerge on other planets independently over additional billions of years, such as the Vinsoth and the Kashyyyk. 5 billion years later, the Wookiees will evolve as a primitive tree-climbing species. Small-scale civilizations begin to emerge contained to their worlds, and various cataclysms befall worlds, crippling and even extinguishing life on certain planets altogether. However, life continues to develop across the galaxy. In 200,000 BBY, the Zhel precursors to the human race and natives to the planet Coruscant, then known as Notron, and the Tong, who would later become the Mandalorians, a species that also called the planet home, battle for supremacy of the planet. This will lay the foundations for continuous war in the millennia to come. Ultimately, the Zhel succeed in driving the Tong off-world, the first documented instance of spaceflight, though the range of such travel is unknown. Another 100,000 years later, a species known as Celestials, also known as Architects, a powerful group of beings that are known for their huge cosmological constructs and powerful connection to the Force, rose to prominence building artifacts such as Center Point Station, a device capable of moving entire planets to build solar systems and other cosmic feats of engineering. The Celestials build such prominent systems as Corellia, the Hapes Star Cluster, and the Black Hole Cluster known as the Maw. The Kalami species achieves interstellar spaceflight and surveys the primitive people of Duro and Notron, known by that point as Coruscant. However, they are disappointed by the developing human and Duro civilizations and return to their homeworld of Kalamis in isolation. The Sith species coalesce into a unified culture, society, and religion on the planet Korriban. 10,000 years later, the sprawling metropolis known as Galactic City begins to build the first upworld levels. This city will continue its growth to become the planet-wide city of Coruscant in the far future. Planets such as Utapau are colonized by their first off-world inhabitants. In 36453 BBY, the last remaining members of the Kwa species die out on the core world of Tython, with the rest of the species beginning their retreat to their home planet of Dathomir due to the expansion of the aggressive interstellar Rakatan Infinite Empire. This is also the time when the Tho'yor, the pyramid ships that collected Force users from across the galaxy to deposit them on Tython, and who would later become the Jedi. In 33357 BBY, one of the Rakatan's terraforming computers on the planet Kashyyyk malfunctions, causing the hyper-acceleration of the planet's fauna, and ultimately producing the Great Roshir Trees. 3,300 years later, the Rakata Infinite Empire reaches its peak and annexes territories formerly held by the ancient Gree and Kwa species. On far-off Korriban, the ancient Sith species repel an invasion by the Kylix. In the year 27700 BBY, the Sith King Addas also successfully repels an invasion by the Rakata, but the world is devastated in the fighting and is abandoned by the Sith, who move Zyost and leave Korriban as a sacred tomb world. 200 years later, the human natives of Coruscant began to launch sublight sleeper ships over the next 1,500 years, seeding a number of worlds with humans. These include Quat,
Metellus, Scylla, Alderaan, Caros Major, Rendili, and the Tyon Cluster. The humans also launched the Quat Explorer, which colonizes the planet Alsacan. By 27,000 BBY, numerous species begin using tumble hyperdrive technology and begin colonizing other worlds. 25793 BBY, the Force Wars begin on Tython between the followers of the light and the dark. This conflict will play out again and again for thousands of years to come. The Rakatan invade Tython and conquer outer rim worlds such as Tatooine. In 25783 BBY, the Jedi Order is officially founded. 25200, the Rakatan Empire collapses, various minor empires rise, come into conflict, and fall. The Hutt Empire emerges as the aggressive species expand, enslave, and conquer a distant region of space.
And so begins the expansionist era in 25053 BBY. The Rakatan hyperdrives is reverse-engineered by Corellian scientists, thus opening the gate for faster-than-light travel for the core worlds. This creates the Corellian Run, a trade route that contributes to the economic dominance of Corellia in the future formation of the Republic. It describes the formation in earliest years of the Republic and covers just over 5,000 years of galactic history. The Galactic Constitution was the signed document that inaugurated the fledgling Republic. It begins to expand, and Osis and the Tyon clusters have interstellar navigation routes mapped. The Republic makes contact with the Jedi Order, now headquartered on Osis. The Jedi swear themselves in service to the Galactic Republic after a long deliberation period. In 24,500, the first Great Schism occurs, and the Jedi are forced to contend with former Jedi who seek to use the dark side of the Force, calling themselves the Legions of Letao. They are the precursors of the Sith. The Republic also begins to engage in warfare against other intergalactic civilizations, such as the Tienes, leading to the formulation of a unified Republic Navy. This war ends in devastating and radical action by the Republic against the Tienes, which causes the Jedi to sever ties with the Republic. Through formal renegotiations, the Jedi return and agree to be the watchmen of the Republic. The planet Ilum is discovered by the Jedi and becomes a sacred destination. By the end of the period, most of the colonies and the galactic interim has been settled.
The Great Manifest Period begins in 20,000 BBY. It is marked by continued Republic expansion, the opening of more trade and hyperspace routes, and the continued colonization of new worlds or encountering of existing civilizations. Some deep-seated corruption begins within the Republic, driving away dissidents who leave the core worlds and settle on other planets. On the distant planet Kamino experiences rapid climate change, melting its glaciers, and begins the flooding process that will completely submerge the world in the following 200 years. The Republic Bureau of Ships and Services is formed.
In 17,018, the Indecta era begins. It is notable for the introduction of assassin droids as well as the Galactic Republic Judicial Department. The period is marked by the first of several Alskin conflicts that would occur on and off for 14,000 years. The conflict begins as both worlds, Alskin and Coruscant, compete for new colonial territories and influence within the Republic. This period is also marked by an alien incursion when the race known as the Duin Aguin, or Star Dragons, attack Coruscant. However, a peace is brokered, resulting in the establishment of the Coruscant University. Meanwhile, across the galaxy, the Hutt Empire suffered a destructive civil war known as the Hutt Cataclysm, forcing them to relocate to a new homeworld. The era ends.
15,000 BBY, the Kaimudin era begins. The Republic continues its expansion as more species are contacted and join, and others choose to fight encroachment. the Republic reestablishes a Navy fleet, after lengthy debates, to patrol the expanding reaches of space. The Aqualish species engage in an expansionist war, but are stopped by the Republic. Culturally, the numerous peoples, aliens, and cultures that have joined the Republic begin to homogenize as a civilization. This leads to a religious order becoming isolationist and wary of the loss of individual cultural heritage. Conflict with Alskan reignites, and the Hutt Cataclysm ends. Meanwhile, in a neighboring galaxy across a distant void of space, the Yuuzhan Vong species fight a destructive interspecies war that leads to their severance from the Force.
11,987 BBY, Pious Day era begins. A time of great conflict and upheaval marks this era. A new dynasty of supreme chancellors leads the Republic in a series of crusades against neighboring alien cultures, a marked reversal of the Republic's previous history of integration and cooperation. The new chancellors are puppeted by a religious sect known as Pious Day that have strong human-centric beliefs and instituting a pseudo-theocratic state. Continued corruption and previous rifts in Republic history create the zeitgeist that leads to this political change. The Republic begins to invade Hutt space, triggering a series of major conflicts. The Jedi again sever ties with the warmongering Republic, retreating to Ossus in recusal as it was no longer compatible with their beliefs. However, a breakaway faction now loyal to Pious Day remains with the Republic. Pious Day continues its expansionist crusades against numerous alien species on all fronts in newer crusades. Making more enemies, the Alskans join with many Xeno empires and continue their war with Coruscant. However, they are defeated. Many previous citizens of the Republic flee the Core Worlds and are later joined by former military leaders no longer supporting the many crusades of the Republic, and begin formulating a plan to overthrow the regime. A breakaway faction of Pious Day also reveals itself, renouncing their former faith and the Jedi and their recusal, and join the conflict, and Pious Day is defeated. The period lasts just over 1,000 years.
And thus begins the Ductavis era. The Republic resumes peaceful relations with aliens, accepting new species into the fold. Despite this, the Republic is attacked by the Kumari Empire, but is quickly defeated. The conflict leads to the invention and proliferation of planetary shielding technology, planetary turbo lasers, and advancements in hyperdrive technology. The period ends 9,200 years before the Battle of Yavin.
The Ryanitis period passes briefly and unremarkably, with the continued pace of Republic expansion, with more worlds joining. The period lasts about 1,000 years.
The Subterra period begins and lasts another 1,000 years. It opens with more rapid Republic expansion, conflict with the planet Waymancy, which is swiftly defeated, but leading to further advancements in weapons and shielding technology. The Republic begins to overextend and grow too rapidly, and lawlessness and instability emerges in the further reaches of Republic space. This leads to the second great schism within the Jedi Order, as a number of Dark Jedi break away, leading to the 100-year darkness and the close of the period.
In 7000 BBY, the Mandaron period begins. The Republic continues to be joined by new worlds, and its power and influence continue to grow. The Tong species found the world Mandalore. They end their centuries-long war with the Tyanese by destroying their homeworld. The Sith undergo a civil war, and their broader influence continues to expand to various worlds outside of the Republic's influence. Ajuntapal becomes the first Dark Lord of the Sith. The 100-year darkness comes to an end, and the now exiled Dark Jedi discover the Sith Empire forging a new path for the species as a megacracy. The Republic's trade routes through Corellia reach the edge of the galaxy, and first Mandalorian raiders attack a Republic outpost. This would be the beginnings of a multi-millennial conflict. This period covers about 3,000 years of galactic history.
The post-Mandaran period begins in 5,000 BBY. The Teta system is united under Empress Teta during a period of unification wars. The Sith Lord, Nega Sadao, succeeds the dead Lord, Marco Regnos. The Great Hyperspace War begins between the Republic and the newly discovered Sith Empire. The Sith move quickly and conquer or disrupt many of the Republic's most important worlds, including Coruscant. Despite their early victories, the Republic repels the invasion and drives the Sith back to their homeworld of Korriban. A Sith rival, Ludo Kresh, instigates a coup and forces Nega Sadao to flee to the remote moon of Yavin 4. A secretive order known as the Star Cabal is formed. The Sith begin to fracture, beaten back by the Republic, leading to many internal conflicts within the Sith Empire, causing it to go through a reformation. The Republic first contacts Kamino and seeks to begin using their superior cloning technology. The key ore in the creation of Durasteel is accidentally discovered, and the region that will become the Republic's corporate sector is discovered. The fallen Jedi Freeda Nadd discovers Nada Sadao's tomb on Yavin 4 and begins the process of becoming a Sith from his spirit. He then conquers and proclaims himself king of the planet Onderon, starting the Beast Wars with the planet's exiles. Meanwhile, other Sith lords engage in small-scale skirmishes with the Jedi of the Republic. In 4250 BBY, the Third Great Schism occurs within the Jedi Order, and another group of fallen Jedi are driven off Coruscant. The Republic world of Terrace undergoes a civil war. The Jedi engage in small skirmishes with foreign raiders and force them to retreat to the Hapes Cluster, founding a new civilization. The Mandalorians continue to expand, conquering and devastating worlds, and continue raids and skirmishes into Republic space, often battling with the Jedi. The Mandalorians adopt new battle technology, such as the Basilisk War Droids. The Zerka Corporation discovers a world of Kashyyyk and claims ownership of the planet. The Great Droid Revolution occurs when a rogue assassin droid infects the programming of thousands of droids, necessitating Jedi intervention to bring the crisis to an end. The period ends as Onderon, under its dark side king, makes contact with the Republic.
The time of the old Sith Wars begins. Great Jedi and Sith alike rise to prominence, such as Ulic Kheldroma, Exar Kun, and Nomi Sunrider, as the world of Onderon takes center stage in the conflict between Jedi and Sith, and a battle is fought for the fate of the planet. Meanwhile, the dark side continues to corrupt other civilizations, such as the Empress Teta system, through the unrequited spirit of Freeda Nadd. This further necessitates Jedi intervention in what is known as the Krath Holy Crusade. Sith acolytes continue to battle with the Republic, and the newly fallen Jedi Exar Kun is able to subdue the Mandalorians and leads them to attack the Republic, leading to a campaign of conquest that reaches Coruscant. The Mandalorians and the Sith are defeated. However, the Jedi world of Ossus is devastated and forces the Jedi to relocate their headquarters back to Coruscant. The restoration period begins for the Republic as it attempts to rebuild from the devastating Sith War. The Jedi also launch the Great Hunt to exterminate the Jedi-killing Tyrantitech beasts unleashed by the Sith. Meanwhile, the first Yuuzhan Vong probe creatures begin to scout the galaxy. In 3976, the Mandalorian Wars begin as Mandalore the Ultimate invades the Republic under the influence of the Sith Empire. The Republic becomes increasingly corrupt as massive corporations begin to exercise more and more control over political affairs and bribing senators. The Mandalorians are largely successful in their Republic assault, and the Jedi fracture between those that followed the will of the Council and the Revanchists, who sought to go to war against the Mandalorians and exact vengeance for their brutal conquest of the Republic. This retaliation force ends the Mandalorian Wars by Revan defeating their Mandalore. This leads directly to a Jedi Civil War and a Sith Civil War, as sub-factions within each organization vie for control of a splintered galaxy. With diminished numbers on both sides, the Sith gain the upper hand with assassination missions targeting the Jedi and the Order is almost driven to extinction. The Sith Empire also comes to blows with a reunited Mandalorian people after their previous defeat by the Jedi. This period covers just over 40 years of constant and successive warfare and chaos. The Jedi begin to rebuild.
The Inter-Sith War period begins in 3950 BBY, and its events last approximately 2,000 years. The planet Naboo is discovered and colonized. The Republic enters into open conflict with the resurgent Sith Empire and begins the Great Galactic War, also known as the Great War, and the Republic-Sith War amidst a Cold War period. This effectively split the galaxy. With half under Sith rule, the Jedi again leave Coruscant as their base of operations to Tython, their original home world. Galactic exploration continues and more hyperspace routes are mapped. During the Great War, a third faction, the Eternal Empire, emerges and fights against both the Sith and the Republic, turning both to subservience and becoming the preeminent power in the galaxy. The Empire soon turned into the Eternal Alliance when the Empress was dethroned by a group of resistance fighters. The 17th and final Alsican conflict occurs. The Jedi Temple is rebuilt on Coruscant after its destruction at the start of the Great Galactic War, including the wing that would house the Jedi Archives. The period ends with a fourth great schism, which results in the emergence of the new Sith Empire from those who chose to leave the Jedi Order.
The Dreglitch period. Largely defined by the new Sith Wars, as the Jedi who left the Order during the schism appoint themselves the new Sith after the fall of the previous Sith Empire. The new Sith would come into conflict with the Jedi and the Republic, expanding rapidly and carving territory from the Republic. This led to the Republic Dark Age, a period of heavy decline as the new Sith continued their ascendance. Despite this, the new Sith suffered from heavy infighting and fractal leadership, as warlords and their bands would rise and fall within their order until they were unified under one Dark Lord as the Brotherhood of Darkness. The period ends as the dying Republic and its Jedi allies mount a final offensive action, and the resulting battle leads to the complete destruction of the Brotherhood of Darkness, the new Sith, and a large portion of the Republic and Jedi forces. This was seemingly the end of the Sith, however, and the Republic and Jedi would begin a period of restructuring after millennia of conflict. At this time, 1,000 years before the Battle of Yavin, the Sith Lord Bane, one of the last survivors of the conflict, reforms the Order of Sith into an esoteric organization, instituting the Rule of Two, only one master and one apprentice. This tradition would carry on until the Sith emerged at the end of the Clone Wars, subverting the Republic.
The Great Peace of the Republic begins. This thousand-year period begins with the Republic, the last standing hegemon of the galaxy. Though this period is said to be a great peace, with no external conflict, there are a number of internal wars and conflicts that occur in the midst of the Republic. Despite this, these conflicts and crises are largely confined to planetary and sector-level incidences, and are minor events compared to the tumultuous years since the founding of the Republic until now. More worlds are brought into the Republic's fold until it dominates the galaxy, save for the uncharted, unknown regions of the galaxy and the lightly explored area of wild space. Meanwhile, the Jedi Order is able to rebuild and focus itself on their role as protectors and peacekeepers within the Republic, as well as pursue the more arcane facets of the Force. Despite all this, corruption continued to take root at the core of the Republic until the outbreak of the Clone Wars 21 years before the Battle of Yavin. At the same time, the Phantom Menace of the Sith returned to the galaxy in secret, biding their time.
The Clone Wars. When a group of financiers, rebels, and disaffected worlds attempt to secede from the Republic, covertly under the influence of a Sith Lord, the Great Peace of the Republic is shattered as war engulfs the galaxy, not since seen in a millennia after newly minted clone army attacks the Separatists on the planet Geonosis, a spark that will engulf the galaxy in the flames of war. The war takes a heavy toll on separatists, the Republic, and non-combatants alike, and the Republic's decay is accelerated until its final dissolution when the former Chancellor, Sheev Palpatine, declares its reformation into the First Galactic Empire, finally extinguishing the millennia-old Republic and ending the Clone Wars. The Sith also emerge at this time, as it is revealed that the Chancellor, now Emperor, was himself a Sith Lord, and orders the destruction of the Jedi Order. The Jedi collapse as an institution, and its members are exterminated or go into hiding, culminating in the final revenge of the Sith after going underground since their defeat a millennia before. Luke Skywalker is born, 19 years before the Battle of Yavin.
The Imperial Period, or the Dark Times. This short, less than 20-year period is defined by the Empire consolidating power. It begins campaigns of terror against its own populations and keeps order under an iron rule. The first Death Star is built as a superweapon used to control the galaxy. Despite this era of terror, a new hope is sparked as a group of like-minded surviving Republicans, rebels, disenfranchised, and defecting Imperials come together to form the Alliance to Restore the Republic, more colloquially known as the Rebel Alliance. Remnants of the Jedi Order remain in hiding and are rooted out one by one by the Empire until only a handful remain.
So begins the Rebellion Era. This period is marked by a guerrilla-style campaign against the ruling Empire and culminates in the Battle of Yavin, the destruction of the Death Star by a young pilot Luke Skywalker, and marks a pivotal point by which time is marked as Zero BBY. This marks the beginning of the Galactic Civil War, whereby the Alliance to Restore the Republic and the Empire vie for control of the galaxy in a series of battles, each side waxing and waning in the struggle, the Rebellion claiming victories and the Empire striking back. This period finally ends with the defeat of the Empire, the death of the Emperor, and the restoration of the Republic, a lengthy road of legitimacy, negotiation, and conflict to reestablish itself, and it would be many years before the galaxy would see peace again. The Jedi Order is also reforged under Luke Skywalker, symbolizing the return of the Jedi after so many years of absence.
And this is where we will end for now. Though the chronology of galactic history does extend some centuries beyond this point, into the new Jedi Order and legacy eras, which we will examine in due time. Additionally, we have only briefly summarized galactic history up until now, but we will have in-depth explorations of each period and its characters, as we have only glazed over it to get us to this point. The intent of this episode was simply to demonstrate the expansive history of the galaxy, the many wars and political milieu that led to the establishment of the Galactic Empire and the rebellion to end it.
All right, guys, let's go. Let's talk about galactic history. It starts, if you're unfamiliar, in 13, followed by nine zeros. Is that 13 billion years?
Yeah, I think it's 13 billion.
BBY.
It's a long time.
And then extends to...
older than our universe, isn't it, apparently? 4.5 billion years old?
Yeah.
That's what they say.
I think that's the galaxy's age.
I guess, yeah, the planet and the galaxy are two different.
Yeah, the solar system's way older than the galaxy.
The galaxy's older
Than the solar system. The universe is much older than the galaxy. We'll get into this in the next episode, by the way.
Yeah, it's actually crazy how old... I think people, like the whole a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, people kind of underestimate how a long time ago means. And how expansive the timeline is, right? Like... the Star Wars timeline covers thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And if you delve into like any one kind of period, usually there's an extensive history into that. Like I said, we only glazed over it in this episode. But yeah, by the time of the Galactic Civil War, you know, you're living in a very old galaxy that's seen the rise and fall of hundreds of civilizations.
Yeah, the history is so massive. I was editing an episode today, and I was just looking into like some random little fact check that I was doing. And then like I broke out in cold sweats because I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to rewrite this entire episode now because of this gigantic section of history. It's,
yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. Like, a little footnote in history, like, becomes this whole era if you dive into it or dig a little deeper. So, yeah, it's just interesting to note that, like, a lot of people who are into Star Wars, like, all they know is, like, the eras from, like, Anakin Skywalker to Luke Skywalker. But we're already very far into the future. And then, like you said, the timeline actually extends a couple hundred years into the future after that point, which we'll get into at some point in the future. We didn't really touch on it in this episode.
Absolutely. The Yuuzhan Vong, man.
Yeah. It's often confusing for people with Star Wars lore when certain events and things happen, just because of how the movies kind of were released, with where we start kind of in the middle of a saga. You know, with the story of Luke, and then we kind of go back with the prequel trilogy and follow the story of Anakin, and then we jump again into the future. And then they released like different periods of time. Like, they'll have a series of comic books or novels that are released in a completely separate time period, right? Like, the KOTOR games.
And then like the Tales of the Jedi series, which came out in the 90s, and it was like a clearinghouse for a bunch of sort of unfinished novel projects, essentially.
Yeah.
And they just like combined it into an omnibus.
Okay.
And, but that fleshes out the period that directly precedes the Knights of the Old Republic epoch, which of course started in like 2002 or something with the game.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So like they jump around a lot in the timeline. So you really, a lot of the comic books start with an opener that give you kind of an idea as to what you're dealing with, where you are in the timeline.
Yeah,
because it can be very jarring if you kind of don't understand what you're reading.
Yeah, the opening crawl.
Yeah.
I actually, that's a really cool theme that runs through the comic books. As Christian knows, I've been steeping myself in the comics lately, and it's really useful. I really like Dark Horse's little encapsulations at the beginning. And then also at the beginning, they have a nice descriptive paragraph about that specific period.
Yeah, kind of like the era. Yeah.
And I keep trying to track down like the whole complete Dark Horse timeline, and I just want to read it verbatim on air at some point
because
it's really good information, and it gives you a nice at a glance view of the whole Star Wars Legends timeline.
History. Yeah.
Yeah. There is some like really actually interesting, awesome stories within like galactic history if you want to go back far enough. And I think like one I read was like the Dawn of the Jedi. It was written maybe 2012 or 2013.
Yeah, it's fairly recent.
Yeah, it's not like
it was one of the last like Legends
I think properties, so. Yeah. Yeah, and it's kind of interesting in some ways. It almost doesn't feel like a Star Wars.
No, I agree.
Because it's so detached from everything you're familiar with.
It's in like a good way because it's like 25,000 years
prior.
Yeah, prior to like the Battle of Yavin, right? So it has to be so completely different, like culturally and stuff like that. But it has some references to.
Yeah, you get some of the general themes that often repeat through Star Wars. Lots of, you know, light side, dark side kind of conflicts.
Balance.
Yeah, and that would have been in the Rakatan Infinite Empire
phase.
Yeah, that would have been that sort of era that we briefly discussed.
Yeah, and then you'll see like references to certain species that are kind of like a cool cameo. Then you're like,
and was it
grounds
was it,
you again.
The Rakatan Empire's like force using slaves
who, yeah, they're like, hounds. They use hounds. Yeah.
And
force hounds. Yeah.
Yeah. And the Rakatans invented lightsabers. Am I getting that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, they're an invention actually of the dark side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the lightsabers in that too are designed in a very different, like sort of non Star Wars-y looking way. Like,
yeah.
Like they very much look kind of like a high fantasy almost, or if anybody's familiar with Warhammer, it's kind of brings to mind like the aesthetics of the Tau's design, or no, not the Tau, the Eldar kind of stuff with like big swooping angles and that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like even the technology, which is another cool facet of Star Wars, is every era is kind of defined by its technology.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Even within the realms of the movies, right? Like episode 1, 2, 3 versus 4, 5, 6.
They have distinctive looks.
That's like true in like real life too. Eras are defined by like the technologies that are used.
Like when you think of the '60s, you think of, you know, cars of the 60s and stuff. When you look at computers of the 90s versus modern
computers. Like the combustion engine or electricity or the wheel, you know, like go as far back as you want. But like the culture and stuff is so much preceded by certain technological
and we even define eras like the Iron Age.
Exactly. And one more point on that too.
Sorry, Jordan, finish your point.
The Rurcadans were like, they were technically, they were the second species to ever have hyperdrive. So they were given.
Hold on, hold up, slow what? Your roll. Me and Christian have been having a eon-spanning discussion about this. We figured this out. So the Kwa.
Yes. Yeah.
They had like Stargate technology.
Right.
Yeah, which
right.
is different.
It's not hyperdrive technology though. Yeah.
But
it's like wormhole making technology. Yes, yeah.
If you've ever
like
seen
that.
The show Stargate,
yeah, it's basically a total ripoff of Stargate. Yeah. I remember reading
well,
that.
Well, the Stargate too. Idea isn't
even precedes Stargate. The show,
okay,
Stargate.
I'm not super familiar, but yeah. I just remember it from Stargate.
Actually, if I'm getting this right, I believe the concept of the Stargate is supposedly nonfiction. I think that's something that
it's
was,
like a theoretical.
It was
proposition.
Come up with. Yeah. I think it was the guy who wrote Chariots of the Gods.
Oh, really? Really?
Or one of his ilk, somebody who wrote a book like that around the same time who was kind of buddies with him.
Okay.
Came up with that, the theory that they're like Stargates under the pyramids and stuff.
I guess that adds to that Stargate Egyptian.
And Stargate, the movie, just completely took that storyline and ran with it, which is a great storyline.
Yeah, it's a cool concept for sure. Yeah. And it, again, appears in Star Wars.
Chariots of the Gods was written by Eric von Daniken.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm not sure if it was him.
Okay.
But it was a similar time period and similar kind of
genre.
Using huge scare quotes of genre of nonfiction.
It is just interesting though because they're sort of like the first conquesting species to like go across the galaxy and start taking over other civilizations.
So. And I'm also just thinking of another comparison to Stargate here is the Thoyor traveled in giant pyramids and weren't that pyramids spaceships in Stargate or something?
Yeah, in Stargate they were. Yeah, I actually watched a lot of Stargate.
Tune into our Stargate podcast. I actually don't even like Stargate, but anyway,
but you will watch it.
It's underrated. You should watch it.
Conceptually, I like it, but I just don't like the formula.
Yeah. Sam, were you gonna make a point after Jordan there?
I think I was, and now I forgot.
Okay. So anyways, kind of going back to the technology aspect and defining eras, and to your statement about hyperdrive, though, there are eras that are defined by galactic hyperspace routes. So as technology evolves in Star Wars, you go from like very isolated planets and smaller stories, and as the galaxy's opened up by hyperlane travel, and we'll get into like the details of how that all unfolded, but there's a long period of time that's an era of galactic exploration. So it's very much a wild galaxy. You have species that have never been contacted before.
Yeah, it's first contact happening.
Yeah, exactly. And so that era is defined by space exploration, almost like the exploration age of human history, right? As soon as we could have ships that could travel.
Another science fiction property that me and Jordan like, but Christian does not like.
A certain other star-based property.
It's like... that show that
Star the, Journey I think it's called
yeah Star
Star Quest
Star Tracking Star Star something yeah
something about seeking out new civilizations yeah. or whatever yeah.
boldly going
I don't I think it's very
it's pretty obscure.
Small yeah. obscure property but yeah, so again it goes back to your thing of eras being defined by that technology, and that period is defined by that. Yeah, it's just interesting. And the ships and stuff look totally different in that time period. And then you go, you know, years later and
it
things
is,
evolve and change.
Yeah, it is like Alien. And that is what's cool. That's one thing I didn't... My one gripe with like Knights of the Old Republic was it looked too similar to modern Star Wars.
I was just thinking about that as I was reading the graphic novel.
Yeah, even though it's like 2,000 years before, it's like... That's the time.
I think it's longer.
It's 4,000.
Yeah.
It's actually, I think it's
Like
3,996 years or something.
Yeah, but it you basically feel like you're in the same universe.
Yeah.
Whereas I thought that was like, I didn't really think about it till I read Dawn of the Jedi. And I was like, yeah, this makes a little more sense because you're so separated by time. It would be so alien, those two epics, but right?
If you read Tales of the Jedi, though, which is most of those stories take place like directly, well, not direct, like a generation before KOTOR, like 50 years or maybe it's 150 or something.
Okay.
It's relatively close, though.
Yeah.
And but the look of Tales of the Jedi is like very distinct.
Oh, is it? Okay.
And it kind of, I mean, it brings to mind general motifs of the aesthetics of Star Wars, but it does, it's its own thing. And it's definitely very distinct from KOTOR, which I really liked.
So on that note, that also with the whole changing of technology, but still semi-recognizable and like recognizable themes of Star Wars, I remember a quote from George Lucas talking about how he always wants his epics to rhyme. And you definitely get that kind of rhyming scheme throughout all of Star Wars history. Everything from like you keep seeing eras of the rise and fall of empires. You see that constant back and forth between light and dark and that struggle for balance. Like those things ground you. Like you said, even when you're reading ancient Jedi stories from, what is it? Dawn of the Jedi series. Those things still ground you back, even though everything is totally different, like, and it's an alien world.
Yeah, yeah.
Those things bring you back to it, like being
the
Star Wars.
The Darksider, who is he redeemed the Hound, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he gets turned, right? Kind of like Darth Vader at the very end.
It's been a long time since I've read it. I can't remember.
I was looking at Jordan, not you.
Okay.
I was looking at you with my eyes. But
talking to Jordan
ears.
With your ears.
Yeah, I don't quite remember the exact details of the plot, the end of the plot there, but it was, something about the redemption of the Hound.
Yeah, which is, again, another theme that runs through it, right? You have Darth Revan redeemed.
I mean, Vader was, for all intents and purposes, Palpatine's Hound, right?
Like, yeah, exactly.
He was the enforcer.
It was actually similar. Yeah. It would be a similar dynamic.
Yeah, and you see that again and again in the Star Wars tradition.
Darth Maul is like the Hound of Sidious.
Yeah. And his redemption is found at the tip of a lightsaber blade.
Yeah.
He does come back and redeem himself.
I couldn't finish it because those robot legs that they give Darth Maul are the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
I disagree with you.
They're horrible.
I don't hate them.
Yeah, we can have that fight on another episode. But that being said, he does actually redeem himself. I totally forgot.
Because he's like, oh, Darth Maul does?
Yes.
Oh, really?
I got to finish reading that then.
Yeah.
In Clone Wars?
More or
I'm
less.
I'm just going to censor those horrible legs and put my hand over part of the panel.
I will say he doesn't totally redeem himself, but he definitely fleshes himself out as more than
because he's like, and that's one of his strengths. I mean, obviously he looks like a traditional demon, and I really like that about him, like as opposed to Darth Vader.
He's more of like a force of nature
as opposed to Darth Vader, who's like redeemable. He's complex, right?
Yeah.
But like
Maul is like a pure
he's
evil.
Just evil, like that's it,
and a destructive force.
Anyway, as I was saying, the first trilogy gets a lot of bantha poodoo for being terrible. And I mean, deservedly so. There's lots of bad stuff in it. But like Darth Maul is a great thing. And I think, a lot of the design elements of it are very cool. And I mean, those fight scenes in Episode One, The Phantom Menace.
Yeah, you could see how much it improved from the original
trilogy.
Those
so hold up. And I think they're actually, in a lot of ways, better than all of the other lightsaber combat because they didn't so heavily use CGI on human characters.
It was
characters.
More practical
it
effects,
was like,
yeah.
It was like choreography, right?
And the guy, I forget his name, who plays Darth Maul.
Ray Park. He's an actual martial
he's
artist.
He's a crazy martial artist and stunt person in Hollywood who's been working for a long time, so he's like super talented and really gets
so he's doing all those like flips and things, like that's him.
And then again, coming back to that motif thing, he's got that double bladed lightsaber, and who had the double bladed lightsaber but Exar Kun, who is kind of like the Hound of Nagasadao.
It
all rhymes.
Now I will say my one gripe about the quote-unquote rhyming, it can be derivative.
Yeah.
It can be repetitive and it can be lazy.
But it also, me and Christian have talked about this, not in regards to Star Wars, but just in like creative process generally. is it's a constraint that it puts on the writing process that forces you to be more creative. And I think that's part of why we're doing this podcast, really, is because so much creativity has gone into Star Wars and just repeating those motifs over and over again, but doing it in fresh ways.
Yeah, right. And you can see when it's done well and when it's done poorly, right? You get the whole, oh, we're back to another empire, we're back to this and stuff. But if they catch you, you know, like the, we'll always go back to the KOTOR thing, because yeah, it really is a very high standard of what Star Wars is and can be.
Yeah, it should be.
You kind of forget that you're in some elements are being repeated, because yeah, they're taking in such a fresh direction.
Everything's so good.
Yeah, exactly. That you kind of forget that. And that's when it's done well. Yeah,
but maybe a rhyming thing that shouldn't be done is a fourth Death Star.
There's a limit. Yes.
We've had three already.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think we need a fourth. Tired of Death Stars. Yeah. That's lazy.
There is, again.
The idea of like a planet-sized ship is really cool.
Yeah.
But you've done it three times.
or even do something else with it where it's not like a weapon, you know.
Yeah, it does something like that's a cool thing of the Starforge. It is a weapon of its own kind, but it does something different than blow up planets.
Yeah, it's like an actual technological planet.
It's more like a factory.
Yeah, right? Well, that's what it is. Yeah, but it still uses a super weapon to conquer the galaxy.
Yeah, yeah.
In essence, it's the same thing, but in principle, it operates completely differently.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little bit more creative than just.
There is another super weapon that comes up later in the Legends canon, the Sun Crusher.
Sun Crusher.
Oh, I love the Sun Crusher.
Kip Duron.
Again, in another way, it's up in the ante of the Death Star, but it's different.
Yeah.
Right?
And another, it's small. It's a small.
Yeah, it's a ship.
Yeah, it's like.
And it was piloted by a Jedi, right?
I honestly
a fallen Jedi.
Didn't Luke pilot it for a little while too?
But not towards destructive ends. I think he was the one who flew it into the gas giant Kip Duron then took it from or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I honestly cannot remember. That stuff is so far back in my memory that I have
to for me too, but it's deep. Like emblazoned in my memory of like one of the first things beyond the movies that you I got ever into? Learned about Star Wars. And what was really cool, repeating a motif but putting an original spin on it, is Kip Duron's lightsaber, I believe, is like white.
Okay.
Which is really cool. Like that's a color that's just never done, and it's just interesting. And I think that would be great to see in a movie, like a white lightsaber.
A white one or a black one would be sweet too. Yeah.
How would you do?
You could do it.
I've seen it. You've seen it. It's in the. It appears in like Star Wars Rebels.
Really?
Yeah, they have a dark.
Or even like a really deep dark purple, like where it's almost
black. Yeah,
almost black.
Cool.
Yeah. Anyways. Another point on galactic history and politics, kind of going back to our main topic. Quickly want to just give a shout out to the Yuuzhan Vong. We know the galaxy is so huge now. We know that time has passed and a long period of time has passed. But we actually get to the point where we have extra galactic invasion. I know I didn't touch on it during the episode because this actually happens after the Return of the Jedi. And we will work our way to that point. However, I just wanted to quickly mention the fact that we even have species developing outside of the galaxy, and that they do eventually converge with the galaxy that we know and are familiar with, and that their development actually starts a long time ago in
another galaxy far away.
Far away. A longer time ago in a galaxy farther away. we know, like, if you remember back to the beginning of this episode, we actually see when their species starts developing close to the time, and they have big events happening in their galaxy back when the Star Wars galaxy that we know is just developing, right? So their society is very old and comes from somewhere completely different than what we're used to. That's all. I just wanted to give a brief mention to them in this episode here, just because it has to do with the political landscape that when they invade.
Oh yeah, we'll get
it. It's a fresh angle on Star Wars.
I can't wait to cover the Yuuzhan Vong.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one.
That will be our. I'm not sure our white album, I guess.
And then the other thing that's interesting is to see the beginnings of the Jedi, the beginnings of the Sith, the beginnings of the Republic, and the beginnings of the Mandalorians. All these factions play huge roles in the development and the shaping of the political landscape of the galaxy, and they have peaks and valleys throughout that time. There are periods where one group is at their zenith, all the others are more in recession, and then, you know, they'll take turns kind of conquering, being defeated. And yeah, there's just this ebb and flow that lasts for thousands of years of just back and forth fighting, and how deep those roots of conflict actually go, and how like Star Wars is a very apt title for the series, just on the sheer number and scale of warfare that happens in this galaxy.
Yeah, it really is Star Wars.
Yeah.
It reminds me of another, it's another really obscure science fiction property. Like, it's also got war in the title, and like
something about a hammer.
There's like a tool of some, is it a hammer or is it a saw? I can't remember.
Warsaw.
The Warsaw Pact.
Yes. No, yeah. Yeah, you know, you're familiar, like Warhammer is very built on this, if anyone's familiar with it, this very gothic and like constant warfare environment, which you don't really associate with Star Wars. Star Wars seems a lot more like
optimistic. A lot more fun.
Yes, it's fun and optimistic and adventure stories.
And I'm sorry to say this, a lot more Disney, at least in comparison to Warhammer.
Something like Warhammer, yeah. Yes, for sure. But all that being said, like when you really dig into it, there's like some pretty heavy topics. There's some
super heavy.
Like concepts of genocide, slavery,
and just like the darkest form of like nihilist philosophy, like you've ever heard. In
yeah,
your life.
In a setting, and it's just interesting to see how far back and how deep those roots go. So when you're talking about like the Republic finally dying and seeing the death of the Republic, you're really seeing the death of something that has stood for thousands and thousands of years and then finally being extinguished by the Galactic Empire, the First Galactic Empire.
It's a big hairy deal when the Republic dies. Like, that's kind of like if we could project ourselves out greatly into the future, and let's say that there's alien life in the galaxy, like what the Republic is in some way something that we would aspire to.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that would be the ultimate like expression of culture in a galaxy with different life forms.
Yeah.
Right.
And such different cultures and societies all coming together, and then for it to be just extinguished. Right.
And then this like monolithic sort of xenophobic thing,
replaces
takes its place.
It. Yeah. And yeah, that goes into the political landscape, right? Like, again, you have all these different factions. You have the ones that we know, like the ones I just mentioned, those four big ones, Jedi, Sith, Mandalorians, and Republic. But you also have the rise and falls of a lot of other groups that we either hear in passing or we don't really pay attention to, but actually have much deeper roots or completely new factions. I'm just talking about you have things like the Rakatan Infinite Empire that were very powerful at a period of time and kind of become extinguished altogether. You have races like the Kwa and the Hutts, surprisingly.
Yeah, it's crazy as I've been getting into this, doing this podcast. Like, I'm a big Star Wars fan. Like, I've been steeped in this material since I was like 8 years old. And every bloody time I go on to Wikipedia,
you discover something new.
I discover something. I'm like, I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. And so for like the Hutts, for example, is a good example, right? You hear things about Hutt space and you hear about how powerful crime lords are, but you don't realize that they come from a very strong and powerful history to the point that they have a designated part of the galaxy. Maybe it's unofficial, but it's still generally recognized.
I don't know if this has been done, but I would love a graphic novel series
about the Hutts.
About like Nal Hutta. That would be awesome.
And back when they were like actually like
just
movers,
just
and
a
shakers.
Bunch of a bunch of gigantic loogies fighting each other.
Yeah. And they were a very powerful empire at one point and controlled a lot of space as a political entity. Right. And so you see those like,
they're also interesting. They're an interesting race, kind of like the Yuuzhan Vong, in that they're force resistant. And I wonder how much that plays a role in like their power base.
Yeah. And you have like, the interplay of how the force interjects itself into galactic politics. Right. Like in the real world, you have all these different factors and variables, but in the Star Wars galaxy, you have this almost like trump card, which is the force that often like will, and that it works both ways. For the Sith, it's a very powerful weapon, and for the Jedi, it's a powerful tool to try and maintain peace, right?
It's like, if people are familiar at all with sort of writing theory, it's like, it's like a deus ex machina, right? Like, that means God. Is it
from the machine, I think.
God from the machine or something like that. But it's like It's how a lot of Shakespeare plays and or a lot of medieval Renaissance period plays end, where God or some angel just comes and solves the problem at the very end.
Yeah, there's except no lead up or build up to it.
It's really just lazy writing, essentially. Yeah. Like when I was in a writing group in university, like we would all bust each other's chops over using like Deus Ex Machinas in our story because it's like lazy, crappy writing.
Yeah,
and Star Wars does kind of do that with the Force, except because it is such its own thing and like its own character, like it's not a Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah,
like it's actually an important part.
Well, it's sort of established from the very beginning.
Yeah, that's part the of big the universe. Part. Is that it's already pre-established.
It's not like they're interjecting it.
It's not. All of a sudden, there's this thing called the Force, and it saved you in the end, right?
But it's nice because it as a writing tool, it does give you that thing where you can just do crazy, unpredictable things. But there's a logical plot-based reason for it, which
right,
is the Force.
Exactly. Yeah, and then you can kind of get that supernatural bent if you need it to get you out of a story or get you into a new story. Another cool comparison I just quickly want to mention is it's almost like nuclear weapons, right? Big game changer that anyone can use, can be used. Nuclear energy can be used for good. It could be used for war. It could be super destructive. And you could have a whole thing based on, like, you know, should the Republic allow Jedi, you know, people that are this powerful to exist? Do they become a political threat just by their very existence?
So tacking on to that idea about nuclear weapons, it's something that's really large in scale, and that's just something I want to finish off with and leave you to think about, is that just that big scale of Star Wars and how it's so much bigger than just the movies. And we'll get into that more in the next episode.
May the Force be with you.
Thanks for listening.
Use the Forks, Luke.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Why, you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to give the show a 5-star rating and review, and give us a follow on social media. This episode was produced and edited by me, Jordan Swaim, written and directed by Christian Lutz and Sam Swaim. All original music was scored and recorded by my music project. Farewell to Shadowland.
Thanks for flying with us. We are interested to hear from you. You can reach us at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts, comments, or corrections. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating, review, and subscribe. You can also help us out through our Patreon at the Star Lores Podcast. Find us on Instagram, the Star Lores Podcast, on Facebook at the Star Lores Podcast, on Twitter at the Star Lores Podcast, and on YouTube, Star Lores Podcast. We'll catch you next time.